People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Gravity Podcast, where we host conversations on developing a Christian spirituality rooted in love that fosters resilient faith in everyday life.
If you're wondering if you found the Gravity Podcast, you did. This is Matt Tubby, and I'm joined by my friends Ben Sternke and Christy Pendley. Good day.
Hey,
everybody.
Good day.
I'm wondering also if you, as a listener, enjoy that little intro music. A few years back, Ben had a notion to change it, and then we never could decide on new music. And now we're just using that same music we've had for about 5 years. And I wonder, listener,
how long do you think the podcast has been going?
I don't know, five-ish.
Is that your guess? Christy, what's your guess?
Come on.
I don't know. I'm gonna look back on our records, and I'm gonna let you know here in just a second. What's your guess, Christy?
I'm gonna go longer because I think I've been doing it with you for 3 years.
Okay.
And I'm gonna guess 6 years total.
Christy is correct. We started March 14th, 2018.
Come on.
Holy cow.
Released three episodes on March 14th, 2018.
Wow.
So 6 years and 2 months.
Come on.
I feel like
6 years and
2020 was a black hole for me.
Yeah, me too. There's sort of a, it's a time warp blackout slash what happened. I mean, that's the nice thing about keeping all of the records of when we release podcast episodes, though, I can tell you that we released a podcast episode every week of 2020.
Well, does that mean that there's like a 7 year itch and you're going to change the intro music?
I don't know.
Well, that was going to say, I think if we could find music we liked, agreed on it, we probably would change it. But then I was just thinking about how, we recently changed our logo and kind of renamed
our name.
And I do wonder, like, you know, if the music might be the thing that people are most precious about, or if people hate it and they're like, finally they changed it. So if you have an opinion, feel free to opine.
Tell us.
Yeah, and just email us at the podcast at gravitycommons.com. Let us know.
Yeah, that would be interesting. From a branding perspective, you know, the marketing wisdom would say if we were going to change the music, we should have done it when we changed the name and the logo.
If I live my life on the should have, I should have done this.
We don't do that.
No.
I know. We definitely don't. We just ran out of time. I mean, I remember having the notion. I remember thinking, oh, you know, this might be a good time to do it. And then I went to, you know, look for some music, and I was like, ah, I don't have time to do this. And I did something else, and I forgot about it. So,
in that way, it feels superfluous. It doesn't feel essential.
You know? Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, did you all have a fine weekend, Christy?
Yes. Yes. Celebrated Father's Day. Mm. Hopefully you guys did too. Happy belated Father's Day.
Thanks.
Thank you, Christy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We did. Yeah. My son came down from Fort Wayne. So it was the four kids. We just went out to eat. It was nice.
Hung out with my silly kids. We went out to eat too. And then we all decided that even though we liked where we went, mm-hmm. the bill was not commiserate with the dining experience.
Oh.
The cuisine was worth about half of what we paid for it.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah.
Just but in your intuitive heart of hearts, that's how you felt about it?
All of us. We all agreed. Even my 12-year-old.
Okay.
Yeah. So we probably won't go back, but we had a good time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
Well, today, speaking of kids and dads, we're talking to Meredith Miller.
Yeah.
Who wrote a book that is the subtitle is the title of this podcast, but the book title is called Woven. And it's all about discipling and forming our kids into a faith that is life-giving and healthy, you know? And I'm keenly interested in this.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a parent with kids, one would think.
Well, I'd even
doubly interested since you have two.
Yeah. Ha 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 ha. Christy is six.
Don't say that. You can't do that. Sorry.
Sextuply?
I don't
Paul's
know.
Like,
I
mean, yes. Yes.
You
how
open
are
the
you
door,
feeling?
I walk through it.
It's just what the word means.
It is what the word means. Well, I honestly, as a pastor, you know, part of like going through some kind of deconstruction and reconstruction of faith is really learning how to hold your own hand and repair it yourself.
Yeah.
Like that's part of the task, I think, of growing old gracefully is to give to yourself what you need and maybe what you didn't receive. And so even as we chatted with Meredith and I read this book, it felt like the little Matt in me appreciated that as well. So
yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. Anything else, guys, before we jump in? Ben's reorganizing his office as we record.
Sorry. None of you guys can see. I just thought I would
just don't
sneak.
Understand.
Well,
I know you're busy, Ben.
Yeah, I am
busy. Driving your daughter all over town. We're going to Louisville next week. There's lots of things to do.
We're going to. Anyway, my computer, I just realized my computer wasn't plugged in and I was running out of juice on the battery. So anyway, pardon my multitasking.
It's a real professional operation running here, everybody.
The listener would never have known if you didn't point it out.
I don't know. There was clanging.
There was some clatter. I should have muted myself.
There was some miscellaneous noises happening.
Yeah. Yes.
And it sounded like there was activities like
there
that.
We go. Yeah.
Like
there
that.
You go.
All right. Yeah, we should just get into this podcast for Meredith's sake.
Sorry, Meredith. We love you. We love your book.
Yeah. Let's get into it. Meredith Miller joins us today on the Gravity Commons podcast. She's a pastor and a parent who has spent most of the past 20 years helping families follow Jesus. She's been involved with the Fuller Youth Institute since 2007, and from 2014 to 2019, she was curriculum director for the children's ministry at Willow Creek Community Church in Chicago. Meredith holds a Master of Divinity degree from Fuller Theological Seminary, as well as a BA in Religious Studies in Spanish Language and Literature from Westmont. She's a pastor of Panoma Valley Church and calls Southern California home. We're chatting with her today about her new book, Woven, Nurturing a Faith Your Kid Doesn't Have to Heal From. That sounds really good, Meredith.
I hope so.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be with you both.
We were chatting before the episode that both Christy and I spent time in and around Willow Creek in the Chicago suburbs ministering. I was a pastor there. Christy worked Chrissy taught Bible for at a Christian school in the suburbs. And I think many of our listeners will be familiar with Willow Creek. For decades, it's dominated the landscape, right? It's sort of the flagship non-denominational church that everybody aspires to be. How was it like working there, and how did it form and shape the pastor you are today?
So it was a really interesting time to work there because it did overlap with everything that went belly up as we began to learn new things about Bill Hybels. Mm-hmm. And that was not our first rodeo. I say our, my husband and I were both on staff. He's also a pastor. That was not our first time we had been in a megachurch crisis situation. So that felt like we had had some helpful experience. And so that piece was weird. Like it just really was because it was a situation where you're having to navigate that we have collectively not decided to be honest. Mm-hmm. So that was just really interesting. But that piece sort of aside, from a kid's perspective, it was actually really neat. And I don't know that people would expect that. I think maybe just because of mega church tendencies and whatnot. But when I came on board, there were a lot of staff in the children's ministry team who had been part of Willow's ministry for a very long time. And there were a lot of education professionals in the mix. And so you had this group that collectively had done something remarkable, which was to write children's ministry curriculum that was used by lots and lots of churches. And then they themselves realized that curriculum had stopped working and planned to blow it up and write new stuff. And I got invited to be part of that process alongside them. That's and fun. So for the handful of years that I was there, we actually wrote curriculum that I still really enjoy and would be really proud of, in terms of we stopped telling kids what they should do after they've heard the Bible story, mm-hmm. and started creating space for them to hear from God and respond to God individually. And so literally no story in Willow Creek's curriculum for that whole 5 years had a prescribed application point for a child to go and do anymore. We started telling our stories with a better emphasis of God becoming an active character. And the humans still matter and they were part of it, but they were no longer these exemplars that either did something right, so go copy them, or did everything wrong, so don't be like them. And Willow's a great storytelling church. That is something they're really good at, is creative storytelling. And so being able to bring that to life for kids and watch them respond to that. There were just these really neat pieces that the whole team was really aligned in making some, what I think are much needed shifts to like the way we create a resource response for kids. And I just don't think people would have thought it of Willow. But it was really a ton of fun. And then watching it work. I mean, one of the great things about a mega church environment is if we have that many kids on the weekend, we have a lot of stories coming into our space. We have kids from a lot of backgrounds and a lot of experiences. And what we saw was that some of those really key changes let us be more effective in connecting to more kids from more situations and more diverse backgrounds, which is not surprising, really. If you say to kids, hey, God is like this, what do you think? And they're allowed to actually tell you the honest answer. Yeah. Including, I don't believe that, if that's the case. You have better conversations, you have better reach. And so it was really fun to have a context to try certain things out where it wasn't a monolith of kids that are all going to do and be just so. So that part was actually a great surprise in a lot of ways. And I'm really grateful for it.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. As you're talking, I hear a lot of things that show up in your book, right? About storytelling and not prescribing, but letting kids respond openly. Maybe this is a way into then, Meredith, talking about your book, because you say right up front that you are working from what you call a trust-based paradigm when it comes to faith formation in our kiddos. And would you briefly describe what you mean by that and why you think that's important?
I mean that we are most of all inviting kids to get to know a God that we as adults believe is trustworthy. And that doesn't mean we have that God solved and are totally clear about all that that God is, but that we believe this God is a trustworthy God that our kid could know. And so we're helping them in that process. And that's sort of our orientation as adults if we get to be in the life of a young person, which I then contrast in against the obedience training paradigm, which is the adults know not only that a kid should follow God, but exactly what it should look like and sound like, exactly what a child should act like. And so we just tell kids that. And we think it's okay in an obedience training paradigm to prescribe all of their actions and thoughts and words and attitudes and tone of voice and response times. The list goes on. We think that's all okay because we're teaching them to obey a God who deserves to be obeyed. And so if we've, you know, prescribed everything for kids or if we've hijacked process, well, you know, that's a little bit of the fallout. But hey, we know we're right that God needs to be obeyed. I don't think that God cares most about obedience. I think God cares most about trust. And I think the story of Scripture points to the idea that God's dream would be, hey, what if humanity trusted me and the ways of life that I'm inviting them into, despite the fears that might make them think, oh, we couldn't afford to do that, or the scarcity mentalities that might make them think, oh, we won't have enough if we do that, and so on. And so I think one of the biggest shifts I'd love to see when it comes to kids having the chance to explore faith is that the dominant question is, can God be trusted? And that adults who care about the kids say, I'm here to help you figure out if that's true.
Yeah. It's really important because otherwise I think they're at some point their faith then falls apart. It's like a house of cards. If they're not allowed to ask that, if they're not allowed to uncover and unveil some of that with trusted adults, then later on in life it'll fall.
Always.
Always. Mm-hmm. You mentioned obedience training, and that's kind of like one of the alternatives to trust-based paradigms, right? Yeah. What are some of the other alternatives, and then what are some of, you know, their insufficiencies?
I think the other alternatives might be a little bit more like tempting for really good reason. Mm-hmm. So there's sort of a moralism alternative, which is like, hey, can I use Christianity to just help me raise a good kid, you know, who's honest and upright? And I get the temptation because, of course, I want a good kid. Like, of course, I want those things to be cultivated. And because my kid's character does matter, I think the weakness comes when that plays out, because a lot of times a kid still is given like a list. Mm-hmm. Like, here's what a good kid does, and here's how a good kid acts. And still, they still fundamentally believe that then faith is a project in list management. Right. And to your point, Christy, list management's exhausting. Mm-hmm. And the God of list management is kind of a jerk who only shows up if you're good enough.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes. And so eventually that just, I mean, that's one that is highly researched in terms of how young people grow into that as adults and how much it just does not hold up for them.
Yeah.
I think another one that's really tempting is this idea that we'll just wait and see. Because when we're adults who are aware of the risk and when we want to respect our child as a whole person who has their own thoughts and opinions, who may not end up where we end up, when we know that there is bad religion in the mix that we would want to help them sort through, then it's like, well, maybe I'll just wait till they're older, till they're more developed, till their brain is more sophisticated, till they can take on more nuance. And again, like such a good impulse within that, like so many good pieces of why. Mm-hmm. But I think we also know that young people are not just sitting around like thinking nothing about big questions. They're not just holding on as blank slates until they're, you know, 12 and 13 and begin to have better layers of gray and metaphor in their capacity. I think the thing about that one in particular is I want to be in the conversation. So if my kids and I don't practice conversations earlier, we're going to have a harder time becoming a family that talks about this stuff later. Yeah. It'll feel too new and too unfamiliar to us. And so in the same way we do this with things like our bodies, you talk about it in a certain way when kids are 2, 3, and 4, you will adjust it as they become 7, 8, 9, because you know you have some things you want to talk about with their bodies as teenagers, that it's not that you're going to do it at 4. It's that you want to be able to be in the conversation later on. And if you've never talked about bodies, you're all going to get real awkward and real embarrassed real fast over something important where you want to be in the conversation.
Yeah. I was just tempted this week with my own kid of just, there was something that came up and I was like, oh, maybe we'll just give it some time before I actually have a conversation about it. Because honestly, on the parent side, it's exhausting sometimes. You know
really
what I mean?
Is.
And
yeah.
You're like, I would just rather wait and see than actually have the conversation and navigate with grace and truth this harder topic to talk about God, you know? So anyway, I get it. And some of them are really tempting. Yeah. They look really good sometimes.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Especially if we think – oh, sorry. I was going to say, especially if we think that like – we have to do the whole conversation at once. So
right.
We as adults, because we know like, oh, this is a big one.
Right. Yeah.
And so they're like, yeah. Well, if I answer some of it, how much more are you going to ask me back? How deep are we going here? And we can't know that on the front end. So we're like, could we? Maybe not.
Right. We'll be right back.
Hey, the Gravity Commons podcast is supported by Respero. Henry Nouwen once wrote, "The role of a counselor is to help people not suffer for the wrong reasons," which I really like. This is one of the guiding principles of Respero's counselor training. They equip you to listen deeply, ask great questions, and speak words of life into the hearts and minds of hurting people. Their training cohorts, which a lot of our listeners have actually gone through and have said that they really enjoy. Their training cohorts feature lots of personal interaction and practice with feedback, and it's all rooted in the belief that Jesus is the source of life. So check it out at respero.org and learn how to move people toward real transformation, not just symptom removal.
And if I may, Ben, for pastors and ministry leaders, Respero's training is kind of a proven way to identify people in your church who have a gift for counseling and helping others. And it can be a powerful way to help make your church a genuine healing community. So they provide training and supervision that will allow your people to do great work and free up the pastoral staff, right? So, you know, I think we as pastors, we understand our job is to equip the saints for the work of ministry. And I think Respero then kind of digs a little deeper and actually gives those saints sort of the hard and soft skills of how to do the work, right? Yeah. So go to Respero, RESPERO.org, and click on the counselor training tab. Listener, this ad is different than other ads. Ben and I are going to be at a conference, and we want you to join us. We did a national gathering for Gravity in 2017. We did a grief kind of retreat last summer, and we've been looking for ways to gather this year with all y'all because we love spending time with you, and we got invited into something called Theology Beer Camp, which is October 17th through 19th in Denver, Colorado. We're joining a host of other people from around the country. We're going to do some podcasting there. Ben, who all is going to be there?
I'm excited about Ilya Delio.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
The unbearable wholeness of being changed my life.
Yeah, incredible. Brian McLaren's going to be there. Diana Butler-Bass, Brian Zond.
We know him.
Other folks.
Yeah, there's going to be lots of podcasting, lots of keynote speaking, and lots of time to hang out. There's going to be a lot of relational time, and we may even record some podcasts. We'd love to record podcasts even with you, listener. They've given us a discount code for all of our listeners because we are a sponsor. Yeah. So if you go to gravitycommons.com/theologycamp and use the code GravityHobbit, that'll give you an idea of the kind of gathering we're doing here. You get $25 off tickets. Prices go up soon, so register today.
Yep. Beer is optional, by the way.
Yeah, but theology isn't.
Theology isn't, but the beer is optional. All right, that code again, or the website again, friends, is gravitycommons.com/theologycamp. And make sure to use our code GravityHobbit, two Bs, to get $25 off tickets. Hope to see you there.
Let's get back to the show. Some of us are really good at being good.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard because we get rewarded for that. We get gold stars and Awana. Like, we get all kinds of things that just reinforce kind of this false religious self that we create. Another artifact of, and partly that's the religion that you're saying a lot of adults need to heal from, is growing up in these, you know, jacked up, as I'd say colloquially, kind of religious environments. One of the artifacts of that is oftentimes beliefs function like a house of cards, you know? Mm-hmm. So I know I have some friends that were sold sort of the thing of like, well, if creation didn't happen in a literal 7 days, then the entire Bible can't be true. And so then it becomes a house of cards kind of idea. It's very rigid, very brittle, and very fragile, right? You use a different metaphor, though, in this book that I think is so helpful, Meredith. And I'd love it if you'd introduce it to us here. And it's about the spider web. You know, and there's an image of beliefs functioning in a more resilient, adaptable, growing and changing way. Can you unpack that a bit? Why is that more desirable, maybe? And why did you choose that image?
I love the image of a spider web because at a literal level, they are famously strong and adaptable. They are not just functional for a spider. It's home, it's protection, it's nourishment. Mm. And they're so remarkable that like the nerdy folks at MIT want to study them in their literal sense for why they're strong. And yet we would never find ourselves appealing to the image of a spider web as a source of strength. We'd look for buildings or machinery or these other kinds of images.
Yeah.
And then when they get working on the literal level, two things come up. One is that the structure of a web happens as a spider anchors to a strong point, and then they sort of string themselves across to another one and anchor to the strong point over and over. And then after those anchor threads are established, they weave the internal ones, which are the ones that would give a web its unique texture and shape. So there's orb webs that are the symmetrical ones that a lot of us picture, but there's also these funnel webs that look like a funnel shape. The spider lives in the bottom of them. Hmm. There's even a tangle web, which just looks like they went bananas over whatever surface they're on, and it's an absolute jumble, but it's on purpose.
Yeah.
What I love then is if faith is a web, I am anchoring to who God is, not to my ability to be good, not even to doctrines, important though they may be. I'm anchoring to the character of God. And that's where the strength of faith comes from. The internal threads then, like specific beliefs that are minor but not the end all be all, practices that we use to grow and express our faith, the relationships we have that help us and walk with us through things, those get to look unique for every kid and every family and every context. And the idea that a kid would grow into a woven faith that lets them anchor to who God is, but shape it around who they really are and the life they really live and the family they're really part of and the context they call home and the culture that is theirs, it gives them the potential for something that's a lot more resilient, in part because webs can break and then they can be repaired. And so sticks go through them or a bird flies by and a section breaks, like learning that perhaps Genesis isn't actually literal, or the practice you were told is the be all end all. I was raised on quiet time. You better have a quiet time. 30 minutes in the morning, journal, acronym, prayer, the whole shebang. When that practice stopped working in college, I was absolutely upended because it was my practice. It broke. Yes. And yet, it's not that the whole web is ruined. I can lean into other things that are still there, that are strong. And you can repair and reweave only where you need to. Mm. I think we do need metaphors and models that think about the fact that crisis happens or change comes or things that used to work don't work anymore. Things we thought were true don't seem true anymore. Even who we thought God is, we're not so sure that is what God is like anymore. And we have to have models that would say, okay, so that's true. That has broken, but it does not mean everything is utterly destroyed. And when that happens in a literal web, a section is messed up and the rest holds on. And then the spider just tends to what's broken. In fact, if spiders had to reweave their web every time there was damage, they would die. They don't have the energy. And I think for any of us who have gone through significant faith pain from whatever source it came, we've had that moment of like, I can't do this. But also, I don't know if we had anyone with us saying, maybe there's something strong still holding on to you that you can rest in until you're ready. We were all told we were sitting in the rubble of the cards that had all collapsed around us, that we were all starting from nothing. And I don't think that's true.
Meredith, I'm a visual person, so it makes me now want to get like those Halloween like fake spider webs and like put one in the corner of my office and be like, hey, this is just a visual reminder. It's a really good illustration. I really appreciate it. You know, many of us experienced faith formation as kids as primary information exchange. You know, adults talk to us and ask us questions until we knew the right answers and could say the right things. And in your book, you do some work to expand how faith is formed and the modalities or the ways in which kids come to know and love Jesus. Can you talk to us a bit about spiral learning and how that's done?
Yeah. So this comes from the educators, and it was a teacher who first introduced me to it. The idea is that when you have something complex, like calculus, mm-hmm. you get there with kids by breaking that down on purpose into small pieces, and you teach them in really tiny increments, knowing that you're going to come back to the ideas and that you can add complexity and nuance, like one piece at a time. Mm-hmm. And so if you imagine spiraling, you know, around and around in a loop, with my kindergartner, they start counting to 10 and they start playing with the number 10 a lot and they start grouping 10s a lot. And that is a piece of getting them from kindergarten to calculus.
Right.
Bit by bit. Faith is complex. And yet we've treated it like kids can just, yeah, know it all by recitation, which mm-hmm. is also immensely boring. But the idea that we could instead make it smaller on purpose and go with little pieces that are true but at our kids' level, or maybe even at our own level, and then we can go around later. We'll talk about it again in the future. We can add some complexity later on. I think that could be true of Bible stories. I might paraphrase a story for a kid, and you and I as adults know, like, there's some more details going on. Mm-hmm. I'm not keeping them from the truth of the story. Right. I'm going to circle back to it later when they can understand those details or can better take in what they might mean. It might be true of faith practices. Like, prayer might begin with a caring adult saying a prayer that just reminds the child how loved they are. And can we pray about other things? Of course. Are there more ways to pray than just someone saying words out loud? Of course. But we will be circling around and around how we develop a prayerful relationship to God over time. We don't need to do it all at once. And so it's, I find, both really effective because we don't overwhelm kids, not only with content, but also like flat out amount of time an adult says words at them. Like, we talk too much.
Yeah, we do.
And spiral learning helps us keep it short. Mm-hmm. It reminds us like we only go for so long. But then I also think it is great for how you take the complexity and the content and all those pieces of faith and just think through like, well, why would I give my kid all of it when I'm going to have plenty of time to do it in pieces?
Yeah.
Yeah. As you've been talking, Meredith, I'm noticing there's anxiety in me that will we ever have a chance to talk about this again? You know, will this come up again? So I was telling my son, who's 15, who it's hard to know when he wants to talk right now, you know? Mm-hmm. And sometimes I don't guess right. And we're coming home from the gym, and I just mentioned offhand that my mom passed away 5 years ago. And I mentioned offhand that sometimes I forget that she's dead. Not that I think she's alive, but I'll remember her fondly. She's alive in my memories. And I don't know what struck him, but he actually asked me 4 or 5 really deep probing questions about that. And I realized, you know, most of the times I have to do some of this faith formation spiral learning with my son, I do not schedule. It is,
yes.
It is not in my control. It doesn't happen when I'm feeling good and had a good night's sleep and I'm not hungry or hangry or stressed. It just happens.
Yeah.
It just happens. And so mm-hmm. I'm noticing in some ways that sometimes my anxiety prevents me from just like not forcing these things, but also then sometimes I'm not ready when they just happen. I don't know. It's just a reflection based upon what you just shared. I don't know if you have any. Do you find that to be true? And how do we then ready ourselves for those kinds of conversations?
I think it's quite true. I think that resonates with a lot of the ways other parents talk as well. That what then is great about that is we're trying to create like space and safety. That whenever our kid is ready, then we'll be there for them. Not necessarily like because it's our best day or because we've got answers at the ready or anything, but just because relationally there is always space and this is a safe thing to do.
Yeah.
That's more important than content anyway. Anytime your kid goes into a territory where you're like, I don't really know, then you say that and you can always come back to it. So that part, I understand when anyone feels nervous about that piece of readiness, but it really is so fine to just do the, hey, I don't know. And that's a wonderful question. Mm-hmm. We'll just come back. But I also think the one size fits all, like kid faith thing where everybody's having a devotion every night at dinner and it comes from a book. And like, to your point, it's on a schedule, has created this myth that that's like what we're all trying to do. We're all trying to get our family to like get with the program. And we're not. We're trying to live our regular lives together in ways that are anchored to the love of God and beautifully ordinary. And we're trying to model for our kids what that would mean to just be people who love and follow Jesus. Yes. So that our kids have imagination for that, which means even to your point that it was in the car, like that's an actual like researched reality. Most families say that the car is the primary space where they are likely to get into a significant conversation with a young person. And a big part of that has to do with not having to make eye contact with your conversation partner. It creates more safety. Or the fact that you're trapped. I mean, it's a clue to just like, if you wanted to create a little more space, one of the biggest things you could do is look at the vibe in your car and say like, hey, do we make sure to kind of tuck our devices away? And do we kind of, you know, keep some space in the volume of the way things are happening? Not for every single ride to become some point of deep connection, but just so that it's available. Availability is huge.
Yeah.
At our church, we just actually, I just gave everybody car questions. I made this little car, you know, thing, and everyone took it home. And it's just like, use the 10 minutes on your way home from church, or the 10 minutes on the way to soccer practice, or the 10 minutes from picking your kid up from school, and pick one of these questions. I don't care which one, and just dialogue, just be intentional, because it's a beautiful time. So, well, there is so much to talk about in part one of your book, including how to read the Bible with kids. But I want to get to part two. Okay. And so you focus on six attributes of God: good, powerful, just, joyful, present, and Jesus is Lord. Talk a bit about why these attributes, why start with these?
Part of the reason I picked them was that I appreciate the way they sort of hold tension for one another in ways that I think are really helpful. So kids often picture Jesus being powerful or God being powerful as if God were like a genie. And so the power they believe is meant to help fix circumstances or provide happiness. And then when things don't go how they would hope, when perhaps they pray for something and it doesn't pan out the way they thought, they're left with a lot of questions about what God's power means and what it's for. But I also think if you were to imagine our spiderweb thread of anchored to power on the one hand, but then strung on the other hand to something like justice, where it's like, well, what does God most want to use God's power for? And might it be more oriented towards making wrong things right than just doing the things that we sort of wish would get fixed in the short term? Not that God doesn't care about it all, but like, how might being mindful of God's great heart for justice help us not see God as a genie, but as a God that's inviting us into making the world right and empowering us to help in those ways? And so I just kind of appreciated it. It's not comprehensive, but I've seen how each of those six can be really helpful for the questions kids have as they try to get to know God, and can help sort of remedy some of, I think, the very common and totally understandable sort of like misrepresentations of God that we can get stuck in, especially when we're young and trying to figure it out for the first time. So that was kind of where we went, trying to see what would come of it.
And now a word from a sponsor.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, let's get back into our conversation.
Hey, Chrissy, it reminds me of how the axioms kind of function around gravity. Like, yeah, they create, to use maybe another discipline, another language, they create the foundation for a secure attachment to somebody that's trustworthy. And I think that's part of, you know, to go back to your spiderweb image, Meredith, that's part of the problem is a lot of us have, you know, that foundational thread of the web was something that got broken or removed or is under threat, right? So the whole thing has collapsed. And I think these very simple phrase words or concepts, attributes of good and powerful and just, et cetera, are much more resilient and anchor points, I think.
I hope so. I think that there's not, like, I just wanted to do joyful because it was fun for me to talk about God being a joyful God. Mm. So some of it was also that.
Yeah. Well, at the end of your book, I think the last chapter is sort of what I hoped it would be, which is essentially like, how would I begin to incorporate all the gleanings from this book and do this or discern how to apply this, right? And I know you can't walk through the whole thing with us, and I hope our listeners do get the book and see it. But maybe as we close, what are one or two things that you either want to draw out from our conversation we've had or that you name in that chapter that you want to just highlight of things we can do to help form a faith we'd wish upon our kids and our kids? Yeah.
So if what we're getting to do is be a family that sort of weaves a web of faith that's all our own, right, that's anchored to who God is, but then totally uniquely shaped to who we are, there are kind of four big themes that come up for how that takes shape. It has a lot to do with the rituals and traditions we would have, things that get repeated, the experiences that we get to be part of, which might be less frequent, but they're important. Things like I had the experience of being part of a faith community or the experience of being involved in working for justice. Relationships that young people just need more than their nuclear family around them as they figure this out, and the chance to explore scripture. So those are like the big four. But the way those four get expressed, there's like 100 beautiful ways to do that that are helpful to a young person. And so for any adult who gets to be with a kid, those four categories can sort of be a guide. And the second half of the book was that. It was taking those attributes and trying to offer some concrete expressions of how each of those four might look just to see it sort of come to life. I think that what you could start with is simply, and this is the process we name in the chapter, like you name – like for realsy, what's true about like your family and the season you're in? Like, who are y'all? Not who you think you're supposed to be a good Christian family or what you were told you're supposed to be or what you were raised in, but like, what's true? How much sleep you actually get? How many diapers are you changing? How many shuttle runs are you taking your teenager on as they get from here, there, and the other place? Like, what's real? Let's name that. I think also naming options that you don't have to do the one size fits all that you maybe were told is all there is to being a good Christian parent. You have a lot of options. So just name the ones that sound like the most fun or sound like the ones your kid would most resonate with.
Yeah.
And then you narrow that down to just a couple because you don't want to get into this idea of doing like extreme makeover family edition where it's like, well, now we're going to, you know, just totally bring all the faith stuff in. Pick like a couple and narrow it down and then try them and try to make that really concrete. Like, okay, this time we're going to try a car question. We're just going to try bringing one up and see what happens. Or we're going to try getting connected with a nonprofit and doing one day in the morning. And we're just going to see what happens. And then you tinker based on how it went. You just see it as an experiment that if your kid loved it, then maybe that's something to lean into. And if they really didn't jive with it, you get curious about why not. And does that mean same practice tried a different way, or does that mean not that at all? I also think just that flow of name and narrow, try and tinker, it invites us to think about the like informal but incredibly important ways that our kids get to know what faith is about. I don't know that we're always giving ourselves as much credit as we should for the stuff we're already doing and the ways that we are already bringing this to life.
Yeah.
When we are creating family warmth and connection, that is actually a faith building element, whether or not we're talking about faith kinds of things, because any warm family is going to have a better way to explore this kind of stuff, be in conversation together and so on. And so I think it's also a process that lets you notice what's already working and not think you've got to like start it all over from scratch.
Yeah.
And it also lets you avoid the stuff where you're like, I could do this if I just didn't have to do this one thing. Then don't do that one thing.
Yeah.
Name a different option. Try a different option.
That's so good. I hear freedom in that. And I hear permission to be creative and experiment. I mean, the tinker word is really important. Most of us who listen to Christian podcasts and think about faith formation in our kids, we take it so seriously. And I think the permission and freedom of a joyful God who's present and good to applaud even B minus efforts, because he's bigger than our B minus. Thank you, Meredith. The book again is called Woven: Nurturing a Faith Your Kid Doesn't Have to Heal From. I appreciate you being with us today and chatting about this a bit.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
She was delightful. After we hit stop, I just communicated to her. She's just a bright little spot, and just I just appreciate her joy and her hope that she brings. I think a lot of times when people talk about their desire to raise their children with genuine faith, there's almost like this doom and dread of maybe because of their own baggage of what they've experienced. She just didn't appear to have that. It didn't come across in her demeanor, her voice, the way she talked, it's really who she is, I think, that comes across in that. And so I just was really thankful.
Me too.
Anyway.
Me too. It struck me, Christy, that one of the things I appreciate so much about you and Paul and learn so much from you is how intentional you are with creating spaces of, you know, curiosity, discovery, being present with your kids. Mm-hmm. You mentioned creating those little conversation packs for church. Like what other things do you do to sort of actualize the stuff that Meredith was talking about?
Yeah. I think she hit it right on the nail of it really is within life. Like just the conversations that you have wherever you're going to be intentional in that way, whether that's before bedtime or in the car or whatever, to know your kid and to know when that's going to be good. But I also think that just there are some, having space and time is a big deal. And I don't know about you, but I have to create that. I have to be disciplined about that piece of it. Not like what quote unquote curriculum are we going to use, but like I have to be disciplined about, okay, I'm carving out this time with my family or with this kid. And I think that that's really important. But I think what she said about just trying things and tweaking things is really helpful. And so especially as it's like summer's coming, and I don't know when this is going to release. So sorry if this is like, but I think
if
it's
summer's
like
here.
Yeah. But I think, you know, looking at the season and being like, hey, what can we try? Are we going to, like, maybe we're going to read a book together. Like, maybe we're going to read, I don't know if you have younger kids, like, you know, Chronicles of Narnia, pick one of those. But then talk about the religious things that you see, the faith-based things that you see within the book. Maybe that's how your kid is wired. Or maybe you're going to go to the zoo and talk about God's creation. And like, you know, or you're going to go to the beach and like have an intentional conversation about, I just think you use the environment that's around you to then have that. And so even just last night, we are religious about family night, which is like, please don't think I'm like fundamentalist. I'm not, but like, we do have it. And it's like, because otherwise the eight of us would never see each other. And
right.
You know, and so it was interesting because Paul was like, I want to talk about superheroes tonight. And all the kids were like, what? And so he basically was like, everybody has a superpower. What's your superpower? And like other people in our family named a superpower for somebody else. You didn't say what yours was. Like, what do you see in the other person that is just, they're so good at that. It's like who they are just comes out. And we all talked about that and like kind of honored everybody in that. But then Paul was like, okay, so you know, like Hulk, like he is superpower is strength and he's like really strong and it's awesome, but it's out of this crazy anger. And like sometimes it can destroy things. So can you think about how maybe your superpower can also destroy or hurt somebody who might not be like you? And so how would that come out? And then he had everybody name their own, like, if this is your superpower, how could that be hard for somebody else? And while it wasn't like a Bible lesson, quote unquote, it for sure was an important intentional conversation that was rooted in faith. And so, anyway, that's the Penley family. That's what's going on here. But I think it takes intentionality.
It does. I think I've got the secret. We just need to get Paul Penley on loan in our families for family night. Ship him out. Yeah. I know he doesn't travel enough, Christy. So,
you know, he can come talk about superpowers. Do a scavenger hunt in the dollar store, which is another one of our family things.
Oh, that's fun too. All right. Well, I've got a pro tip.
Okay, tell me.
It's something you can. It's a question to ask your kids.
Great.
All right. What did Buzz Lightyear say to Woody?
I don't know. What did Buzz Lightyear say to Woody?
A lot. There's like four movies and a bunch of short films.
Wow. Like, you know, I was like preparing myself for like a dumb joke, but not like a non-joke. Like, what's worse, a dumb joke or a non-joke?
I don't know.
I'm
going to keep turning this little part of the show around.
Okay.
I'm going to wear it out.
Yes. Well, it might have already happened. Oh, man. All right, listener, take a tip. I don't know what it is. And maybe
Buzz Lightyear, Woody.
Yep.
See what your five-year-old thinks. All right, everybody. Until next time.
Peace.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, please tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is the best advertising. Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. To join discussions about the podcast and lots more, join us in the Gravity community. It's free to join, and you can connect there with other listeners to the podcast to talk about faith and spirituality and whatever else comes up. To join, go to gravitycommons.com/community. The Gravity Podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his mixing, engineering, and production work at aaronsternke.com. Finally, we would love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, you can go to gravitycommons.com/message and click the start recording button. You can also email us at podcast@gravitycommons.com. Catch you next time.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.